Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at League of Education Voters. In our podcast, we interview policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create a brighter future for every Washington student. Fernell Miller is the founder and CEO of The Root of Us, a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultancy with a focus on identity development, empowerment, and building strong communities. She is also a physical education teacher in the public school system. Students are at the center of everything Fernell does, personally and professionally. As a 38-year veteran educator, Fernell is an education activist and community organizer for social change. Her roots of commitment to disrupting the white narrative over the past three decades are cemented in rich relationships that have changed her community. Fernell started mentorship and leadership programs for Black youth to help build community and support Black student unions in middle and high schools. Fernell and her family are longtime residents of the Kenmore community, and she continues to share her experience and expertise with young people through the many activities that help to build community, foster education and understanding, while bringing the fun to families and folks of all ages, ethnicity, races, cultures, genders, and abilities. Info at therootofus.com.
Fernell, I did all that.
You did all of that. Yeah. Well, tell me more about The Root of Us. What are you hearing from communities during this historic time?
Oh, first, thank you, Eric, for having me. I always just enjoy talking to you and just being able to have the conversations that we are all wanting to have and don't have the time or space to have. And so much could be understood and solved if we were able to have these opportunities to talk like this. Wow. Okay. So yes, The Root of Us. I was able to just finally solidify what I have been doing in my community forever out of the back of my trunk, you know. And I have a wonderful family who supports me, and my son has a business that he just developed a beautiful website for me to just pour all of my wisdom and tools and knowledge and the 30 years of relationship that I've built in this community to be able to share with everybody, to learn and grow together, build community, strong roots, all of that. And if we would just realize how much we are connected as a people, as a community, we are each other's roots. We are each other's medicine. We're each other's healing. And we can't do any of it without each other. The youth and our wisdom in the community are much ignored. I guess that's why I've stayed connected to my PE position for so long, is because I need that element of youth, play and connecting with kids outside of their desk, outside of chained to their books and classrooms and all the academics. They need autonomic space to be able to be their full selves, and PE and music and art, all of the things that we've been doing in the pandemic is a way to highlight that and draw into that strength and be our fullest selves. What we don't realize when we have kids step into classrooms and step into school, step into those spaces, they leave behind the parts of them that they need to be able to grow and develop. We're asking them to fit in a box. We're categorizing them. We're, you know, labeling them. They're labeling themselves. Their peers are labeling. There's all kinds of things stuck to them that, especially in their years of developing identity. I mean, I'm not youth anymore, but I'm still developing my own as well. I just spend a lot of time making sure that youth have the space to be who they are becoming without everybody else telling them who they are. And so that's the root of my work, is identity education and getting to the root of each of us so we can see ourselves, because we all have a story.
Yeah.
We all have a story. And if we can share those stories and see ourselves first, then we can see somebody else more clearly. And gosh, when we have relationship and see each other clearly, a lot of problems go away because we can actually see and hear and understand from a level that we don't usually get to. We just sit next to each other or live in a house. We don't even live near each other to do that, really. So we're very isolated and segregated. I think we're more segregated now than we were when I was born, 60s. So the reason why I highlight youth is because it came from just the pandemic. I can't speak enough about the liminal space. That's the space between what was and what's to come, and transition. I love transition because as a PE teacher, I get to see transition from someone from kindergarten through college. Wow. And that's a very rare picture to see somebody's development, their mind, their body, their thoughts, their philosophy, their heart, their soul develop over a period of time. I get the best view in the house. I just love it. And that's what keeps me connected and looking at the future, because I know it's coming. A lot of times we get a snapshot picture or a third grade picture or a high school picture or, you know, a sports picture of a person, which doesn't even say a half of who they are and what they're going to become. And so I just love to give youth room to do that and space to do that by accepting them right where they're at and knowing that there's more to come. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, I think kids feel so judged by adults, is because they only see that snapshot. They only get that chance. It can change the trajectory of somebody's life and their potential by what a teacher, administrator, coach, somebody, you know, says to them in that snapshot of a picture, which is just horribly unfair.
What are you hearing from students right now? Because this is such a historic time, not just because of the pandemic, but also because of this strong focus on racial equity that we haven't seen in decades.
Well, because of the pandemic, this is the first time that students are able to even articulate what they are experiencing racially, because there hasn't been a time ever, even in my life. My mom's 88, and she's never felt the lift of oppression off in a way that the pandemic has brought. Mm-hmm. So as I just have been checking in with kids and community, and I use a weather report because we all experience the weather, and it gives common language and takes the emotion off of what we're feeling, you know, so it just helps to talk in weather. And so when I hear, you know, I got hail with fire on it today, oh, kind of crazy weather scenarios, that gives me a shot of what folks are feeling. But what I was hearing was, what a calm, what a silver lining to the storm. Even though they didn't have, you know, all the tools for school and homework was overwhelming and couldn't get connected and being away from their social life. I mean, even in all of that cloud and storm of being away from school, what they were so thankful is that the room to breathe. They didn't feel that daily microaggressions, having to show up and assimilate in a certain way, being out of oppression and pressure. Since everybody had to go home and get out of it, it was like a huge awakening to, oh my gosh, that's what world without racism and oppression would feel like, to not be in that in a daily basis. I mean, even for me, I'm good at navigating white space. I've been in that all my life. I've got tools, and it's exhausting still. But for kids who don't even have words or tools, or is this what life is? And so to be out of that and having to navigate every single thing, from being tracked and stalked and assumed and accused and underestimated and ignored and hypervisible and invisible at the same time, and all of those racial undertones, to be out of that for a period of time. I mean, that was like, woohoo! I never heard so much joy and like, Miss Miller, I can hear my own thoughts. Wow. Because their thoughts aren't being underestimated and attacked and replaced by anti-blackness and all of that. And man, I could get up, my body's responding to, you know, me being able to rest when I want to. And boy, I want to start with my music lesson today and get me happy and then go into my math. And I mean, they were getting to orchestrate their own schedule, own life, own body, own show up time. And it was, we've been meeting every day, even though school's out. we've been meeting every Saturday for sisterhood, self-care, and all kind of things. And it's just been so freeing. Like, they don't want to go back to school. After now, you know what a breath feels like. How can you go back and go and hold your breath again and just wait for it? So that's where our conversation started about, okay, well, what would it be like to go to school? What kind of school would you like to go back to? And so that's where our survey started. And it takes us through your trip to school. What happens when you get to school, and what do you need to do, and what do you need to take care of before you even get in the classroom and your breakfast or whatever, and in the classroom and through the day and through your electives and specialists and in the hallway, all the time that's in between classes or gosh, I couldn't take depression in the classroom. I needed a break. Where do I go for my break? How do I get my own self back to feel normal so I can step back into the classroom? All of those things were addressed in the survey. And so after taking, they said, wow, I have never felt more seen in my life. Like, we're going to talk about that. We're going to answer that. You mean you're asking me that? Finally, I'm wanting to talk about that forever. Nobody asked me that ever. So all of those answers to the survey has turned into policy they're writing right there. They are writing their own policy that affects their daily life. And if only adults could see that, hear that, understand that, they're brilliant. They know exactly what they need. Of course, they're living it, but yet they're so far removed from the process. And we in education love to talk about how it's about the children and for the children, but we never, never involve them unless it's a superficial way or one or two at a table or a meeting or a conference. And then we feel so good about, look, we had youth in the room, as if that one or two kids can speak for the population of multitude of youth that there is. And
yeah, tokenism and not even, right there.
And not even the youth that are, you know, the ones that aren't even strong enough to be at the table. And I say strong enough, meaning they've been so ignored, marginalized, dehumanized, underestimated, undereducated, that they're giving up. They don't want to say it one more time. They don't want to hear your lip service one more time and then be ignored one more time. They don't want to break the seal on their lips to even have the conversation. It's too hurtful. They get asked to show up to share their story, and then nothing happens. That's been happening for decades. And so kids are not, they're just done with that. They're so done with us adults. They just don't want to even bother. And so that's why, again, with the survey, to protect them from the adults who keep trying to drag them into their performance-based equity. And it's like, if you want to hear from them, then here it is in writing. You can't twist their words back. You can't erase them. You can't pretend that didn't get said. Here it is right here. This is what they said they need. If you're willing to actually put your action and your money where your mouth is, then you need to listen and do this. And nope, they don't need to come and beg for it and share their sad stories about it, because you already know them. You already know the stories. You've known about them for years, and you're not willing to do the work to even understand, to be able to put them in action. That's what's been going on. And so what's happened is they have found more voices like theirs and started there. You know how youth do on their super highway of communication. I don't even know what they did. They just found me and said, hey, will you help us? We hear you like to center kids. I'm like, yep, here's a place you can be centered. So they started working together and with each other, and, you know, not even in our district, it's all over. And they're just finding commonality in their story and their voice about, hey, do people ever listen to you? I mean, I just started kind of asking kids. I said, did you know that this can happen in your life? Or have anybody ever asked you for your input about your education ever? And their eyes just get big, like, you mean we could be asked? You know, they just don't know. You know, it's just liberating, because the history, if you historicize education, it's not for liberation. It was for indoctrination. And right. We need people to make stuff, and we'll skim off the top who can do some stuff. But liberating minds, that's unheard of in education. It's kind of dangerous too, because, oh, we don't want kids thinking for themselves. We don't want anybody thinking for themselves, really, because it's easier to get them to do what we want them to do if they don't. They have put it together. Yes, they're brilliant. They just want to have an opportunity to educate people about their voice. They heard that the Equity Fishbowl, that Aaron Jones and Shannon Houghton and others, we've been meeting all since the pandemic started, and we just continue to keep our eye on the ball of equity. And what developed was some framework to do this work. And I think it was you that came to one of our meetings, and we said, gosh, we should let everybody else know about this and what kids are able to do and want to do and how to center them before all the barcodes and budgets are put on when the legislative session happens. And why not have a teach-in, an education session? So that's exactly what they did. They led 10 breakout groups on all of the answers that they wanted from the survey. We want to have teachers that look like us and represent us. We want to be educated about racial issues. We want to not be tracked and stalked and policed in our schools. all of the things that we never listened to them on, they have the answers. And why? It very much lines up to what they've been experiencing, and they haven't had the tools or the outlet or the platform to say it. I'm just happy that there's folks like you and others that are ready to lift them up and center their voice so their needs can be met, because those who are in the most need should lead.
Yeah, I agree. And the rally you were talking about was on July 21st. So that was not that long ago.
Their involvement in the last one started with a video. I asked them to tell me, well, when can you return to school? And so a 20-second video that says, I can return to school when? And then tons of students flooded that in and made a video of that. And so that's what started their voice a rolling. We're having the same issues that we always have, but they have the words now to express it, explain it, and then solve it and resolve it and express what that looks like and how it lands on them. They're centering Black male and Black female voices because they realize that the anti-Blackness that they're witnessing or experiencing have such a deep consequence. If we clean it up for Black people, it benefits other groups of color. But the opposite is not true. You know, if you clean it up for women, it doesn't clean it up for Black women. If you clean it up for trans community, it doesn't clean it up for Black trans community. You have to go to the very point of what the whole racism is based on, which is hating Black people. Mm-hmm. And so dehumanizing and all of those issues when we recognize and clean it. The first rally, they had over 545 people show up and stay in conversation with them. They wanted feedback. They wanted more contact, more information, more. So the students made their own newsletter. They have a podcast that they started from this. They'll be doing luncheons. They've got classes coming up, just a whole host of liberating activities for them. I just love their, you know, they text to say, thank you so much for this purpose. This is all we've ever wanted.
Oh,
I mean, just wow. That's education, isn't it?
Absolutely.
they come ready for it. We just beat it out of them. That's all.
Yeah. Now, for now, how did your own education play out when you were growing up? What worked and what didn't work?
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm from my family's educators. You know, when you grow up in a family like that, you don't really realize what you're growing up in. My father and Dr. King would have been the same age. They were at college, same time together, all of that. So I'm in a home that's sounding and acting and breeding Black excellence. That's what I knew, you know, Aunt Rosa Parks, that's all I knew. It doesn't translate outside your home when you get into white space, because I knew that inside my home, but my white teachers were not validating Black excellence outside the home. So I just thought, this is crazy. What's wrong with everybody? And so what I realized from, you know, my first experiences in education as a child and then starting school in a white community, how much they didn't know, how much they assumed with the ignorance of their own history, our own history. And so having to navigate and walk through that, knowing the truth about me, you know, it's a teeter-totter every day. And that's why I say, you know, navigate like a ninja through white space, because it's not safe because of the ignorance. It's like walking around with a toddler that's going to step on you or fall on you any second because they don't know, you know, that they're just tromping around in the room like that. And so my invisibility and hypervisibility in an all-white space was just deafening and traumatizing because I never got to see another face like mine. And I explained it to my elementary students. I said to all the boys, what if you never got to see another little boy? Every place was girls and women, and you didn't get to play with another boy. You get to hear another boy's voice, and all the boys are just falling all over the floor. You know, oh, wow, I would never. And, you know, vice versa for girls, and different scenarios I would bring up. And I said, well, what, you know, because we all have that. We all have things that we don't think are common and we feel alone about. And I said, but what if it's something that you can't make go away, or you don't have the choice to erase, or you have a disability that's very visual? What do? And so you need to see that you're not alone or not less than, not alien, not othered. And that's what the whole belonging and identity is about. It's like we all get to show up how we are. And so if we only make a narrative of the dominant culture that that's the only thing that's okay, then of course everybody's going to feel left out and put aside. So I just use that as an illustration of the isolation. I know how to show up in spaces. I've navigated a long time, but kids are really at a disadvantage, and especially in our social media world and all the images and to the trauma that they already feel themselves. Mm-hmm. And then to be traumatized by everybody watching, it's like another fishbowl level of having somebody be a voyeurism into your life while you're trying to have it and live it. It's very unsettling, very uncomfortable. It's scary. It's not safe. That's one of the reasons why students says, you know, I don't want to go back to school. It's not because of the pandemic and being 6 feet apart. I wasn't safe before. I didn't feel safe to speak up in my classroom and say my voice because I'm surrounded by this white culture that doesn't allow for my voice. It doesn't allow for my thoughts, doesn't allow for my body movements. It doesn't allow for my difference. And so the safety is about inner personal safety that is really hard to navigate. And so that's why I knew I needed to come back to disrupt that, because I barely survived it. I mean, I got to survive on the very privileged end of it because I was athletic. I could be on a sports team and be valuable for, you know, 3 months and then I was invisible. Or I could be in this activity and be valuable and be one of you, but then I was invisible. And so it was always this back and forth. And proms were held at the golf course country club, but of course Black people weren't allowed there. And then, the swimming pool in the neighborhood, but of course, you know, Black people weren't allowed there. And it's all in plain sight. But when you're in dominant culture and raised to not see it and that it's for you, you must think everybody gets what you get. You know, obviously that's not the case. So yeah. I'd love to have a racial reunion with all my fellow classmates. I'd love to have this talk with them.
I'll bet.
So that's what led me to be back in this community and to stay for so long. My little brother was coming behind me and I needed to be there for kids coming through and especially white kids to disrupt that narrative of the only Black people they see is on TV or all the programmed stereotyped images that we are fed to help contribute to that anti-Blackness is got to be disrupted. And I'm just being myself in that space and been disrupting and teaching and sharing and just loving on people that they're welcome to enjoy. So,
Well, as we were looking at the start of the 2020-2021 school year, what would you like to see schools prioritize as the school year gets underway? I mean, obviously you've talked about some of that.
Yeah, I can't say enough. You've heard me talk about it so many times about how to tend to the hearts of our students. There's nobody that wants to go back and just be back into the grind of paper, pencil, pushing and all of that until they get their spirit tended to. We want to know, are we okay ourselves? Are we okay with each other? Are we okay with our community? And right now we're not okay. I love the African village, the greeting that they greet every village with is, how are the children? Mm. How are the children? Because if the children are well, that means the foundation of our community is well. That means our growth is going to be at an all-time high. We're going to be really well if our children are well. And our children are struggling. They're traumatized. They're scared. We're scaring them. We're not hearing. We're not listening to them. The uncertainty of things are not just even with pandemic, but as I said, before the pandemic, they want to know, can I be with adults I can trust, who can hear me, who can help me, who can see me? We as adults aren't okay. Me as an educator, I want to feel safe and helped and healed and seen so I can give that to my kids, because when teachers are hungry, they eat the kids. Mm. We need to help our educators, our daycare workers, our all of those community members that we need to be a community with. We need to tap into those and find ways to partner and do it differently, because I don't know how we can go forward without addressing that. I always tell people, I said, I have a little hair care station in my PE office.
Really?
Yeah, because it's a comfort. Mm-hmm. It helps kids calm down, especially in the Black community, and being able to sit on the floor and have your hair braided or done or just calm. that brings students back to themselves. I even have adults come in and use my hair. For now, can I get the curling iron real quick? I was out at recess. Or do you have a blow dryer? I mean, just a simple thing like that is part of all of the things we should just be allowing at school. You want to be under that heavy blanket? Well, we all want one. Let's all just sit in our blanket. We just have to allow us to be. We just need to be. Tend to the hearts, tend to the spirit, and the mind will come.
Fernell Miller is the founder and CEO of The Root of Us. Info at therootofus.com, and a physical education teacher in the public school system. Fernell, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening. To learn more about League of Education Voters or to support our work, please visit educationvoters.org.